sitting up straight. Very relaxed arms and shoulders. We'll recite Om three times. Inhale. We'll do the invocation to Sage Patanjali, so you can read on the screen and or just keep the eyes closed and listen in. It's a little tune to it. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya cha vaidyakena Yopakarotam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. Okay. Mary Lou, you can read the English translation loud.
Yes. I respectfully bow down with folded hands and offer my salutations to Sage Patanjali, the highest among the munis, sages, who has represented the remedies for removing the impurities of the body through his treatise of Ayurveda, of language through his treatise on grammar, Pantajala, Mahapashya,
yep.
And the impurities of the citta, mind field, through his treatise on yoga, Yoga Sutras of Patanjali.
Great. Thank you. So, it's the first day for many of you, but it could be the last day for this round of sessions because we have come to pretty much the close of the round, which we started almost, 2 years ago now, roughly? So this is what we do, we recycle through the whole thing. So it takes roughly 2 years to go through the whole sequence. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. And when I looked at the sutras remaining today, I think we should be done by today. And then next month again, we can start recycling the whole thing. There's never a beginning nor an end, actually. It's a continuous process. In my case, I've been reading the sutras and studying them for over 20 years, and every time I read a sutra, I get something, some new insight into it, something new to learn, every time. Doesn't matter how often, how frequently I learn. There's always a better way to explain it, express it, and experience it. Okay? So, just a very quick overview for those who are new. The Yoga Sutras is a very ancient text. It's about, by most accounts, 2,500 or even 2,500 or even older in terms of the number of years. And it has 195 statements. They are called sutras. In English, they usually translate that as aphorisms. What's an aphorism?
I didn't hear what you said.
Aphorism. What is it?
A saying?
Saying.
Wise saying.
Wise saying. Okay. Okay, so that's what it's called in English, aphorisms, 195, divided into four chapters. And the first chapter is called Samadhi Pada, which is a collection of sutras which define yoga, tell us what yoga is, what's the definition, what are the objectives of yoga, and it also talks a great deal about the state of samadhi, which is the final state of the mind when you have attained the full kind of liberated state. So it talks about that state called samadhi. That's the number one chapter. The second chapter is called Sadhana Pada. Sadhana means technique of attaining something, methodology, procedure. That's sadhana, means of getting somewhere. So it talks about the means of getting to the end of yoga, goal of yoga. Okay, but before that, it goes into this whole discussion of the theory of klesha. Klesha is suffering, pain, you know, any pain or afflictions that we have in the mind. Okay, so that's the whole chapter, beginning of chapter 2. It then goes into the whole theory of karma. Karma and reincarnation. So reincarnation is a very integral part of the yoga philosophy. So it goes into that. And then finally, it goes into these discussion of the means of attaining the goals of yoga, which are listed as the eight limbs of yoga. It's called the Ashtanga Yoga. Ashta means eight. Anga means limbs. Eight limbs of yoga. So it gets into that. And then chapter 3 is called the Vibhuti Pada. Vibhuti is a Sanskrit word for supernormal attainments. So what it says is through deep meditation of various aspects, of various objects, you can attain powers that are beyond normal human understanding. Okay, so you can attain those powers. But then it gives you a very nice, strong warning that don't get hung up with these powers. If you attain them, they are a roadblock into your attain. They may happen, they come, become aware of them, acknowledge them that they are there, but don't get hung up. Don't get your ego boosted up because you have these powers. Otherwise, it's a roadblock to your liberation, your study and all that. Sadhana, as they call it. Okay, so that's number 3 chapter. Chapter number 4 is called Kaivalya Pada. Kaivalya means liberation or freedom. And that's the freedom that we attain when we have attained the objectives of yoga. Freedom from what? What is this freedom from? Where are we enslaved? Mind. Mind, ego. So ego makes a slave of us, and it's liberation from the ego-based mind, from all the suffering, liberation from the suffering that's caused by the ego. Okay? And that is called Kaivalya. And then fourth chapter goes into a little more of the depth of understanding what Kaivalya is and what are the characteristics, all the three gunas, how do they interact, and things like that. Again, a little more of the philosophical aspects of yoga. Okay, so that's what we have been kind of studying. And currently we have been, working on chapter 2. We started from the very beginning of chapter 2, like I said. So maybe if it's okay, quickly, I'm going to go through all the slides in chapter 2, okay? And very quickly, I'm not going to spend too much time, but just give you a flavor of what the contents are. Is that okay, Smita? Okay. So this is just a recap of chapter 1, where I say it's the definition of yoga. Then there are 5 types of fluctuation in the mind, and then how to control these 5 types of fluctuations. And then there are techniques mentioned in the chapter 1, like I said, how to control them. So this is just an introduction to the chapter 1. Now, chapter 2 starts with this practice called Kriya Yoga, and it has 3 characteristics: tapas, swadhyaya, ishwar pranidhana. Tapa is austerities, that you can translate that. Swadhyaya is the study of scriptures and study of the self, kind of self-analysis, self-reflection, through an understanding of what's given in the ancient texts called the scriptures. Okay, so once you understand those scriptures, they kind of provide a roadmap as to how you want to explore your own inner self. Okay, so this is what we are doing, for example, here, Yoga Sutra. We study the Yoga Sutras in depth, right? And the idea being that when we study the Yoga Sutra, understand the concepts, it gives us a roadmap into how to finally self-analyze, how to understand your own self, eventually attaining the state which is now called, commonly called, self-realization. How do you get to that state? Okay, so that's called Swadhyaya. And then the third one listed there is Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara is God, but there is a very specific definition of Ishvara or God by Patanjali. So don't go by your own definition of God. Okay? When you study Ishvara Pranidhana, Pranidhana means surrender. So surrendering to God, which God or what kind of God? Read the definition of God in Patanjali's Yoga Sutra. That's what we have to understand. Not your own definition of God. Okay? So that's the first sutra. So the three activities of tapas, swadhyaya and Ishvara Pranidhana, they are given the name Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga. Kriya means activity and yoga. Yoga of activity. Alright? So I'm running through them very, very quickly. I hope. Is it okay to go through that speed? I'm not staying too long on any sutra. Okay, so what it says is, this one it says that the purpose of this Kriya Yoga activity that we just listed earlier, tapas, swadhyaya, Ishvara Pranidhana, three activities, austerities, swadhyaya, study of the self through scriptures, and Ishvara Pranidhana, surrender, these three combined together, what they achieve for you is twofold. One is that it diminishes the afflictions or the painful activities that go on in the mind, suffering. Okay? So they diminish the mental suffering. And the second very important result of the Kriya Yoga is that it brings us very close to the state of Samadhi. Okay? So it helps us cleanse the mind enough that we can attain the state of Samadhi. Alright? So that's this sutra here. This is just a depiction of how the mind functions. This is just, I don't know why I got it here. This doesn't belong here. Oh, I see. So this is to understand eventually how Samadhi, you know, will appear in our understanding. Okay? So this just is a depiction of the four functions of the mind. I don't want to go into this right now because this is much more detailed. Then let's not work on this. I can spend a lot of time on this one. Okay? So now he talks about, you know, the previous sutra he said, these three activities of Kriya Yoga can diminish all the afflictions. So now he is listing what are these afflictions, what are the sufferings that we have and what are the causes of these sufferings. Okay? So there are five kind of, it's in a sequence, five sufferings or five kleshas that he listed them. So the first one is the root cause of everything. First one is called avidya. Avidya is, what's avidya?
Ignorance.
Ignorance, lack of knowledge. Ignorance is lack of proper knowledge, lack of proper understanding. Okay? So there's a slight distinction you can make between ignorance and lack of knowledge, lack of understanding. Okay, so it is more lack of understanding. All right? But ignorance is the common word used. What are we lacking in our understanding? What do we lack? Right, that's the question. What's lacking in our understanding?
Understanding of who we are.
Who we are. What is our true nature? What is the true essence of our being? Are we just this physical body, mind, etc.? That we are we our thoughts? Are we our emotions? Is that who we are? Or is there something above and beyond all that, you know, that we can claim that we are, that's who we are? But that's the lack of understanding, that's called avidya, which is the cause, the mother of all suffering. Because what that does, it gives rise to the dominance of ego. That lack of understanding, it gives rise to dominance of ego, which is called, ego is called in Sanskrit,
asmita.
Asmita. Asmita means I am-ness. I am. You know, that kind of asmita. I am-ness. Who the hell are you? I am so and so. Alright? So that's called asmita. So what the lack of understanding of our true identity gives rise is to this dominance of ego, and it dominates our being. It dominates our character, our behavior, our thought patterns, everything. Puts a lid on the intellect. So to say, intellect is the pure discriminatory sort of being entity, but then ego doesn't let you work through that intellect. So that's called the asmita. That's another reason for suffering. And then what does the ego do? It puts a label on everything. Good, bad, ugly, handsome, like it, dislike it, love it, hate it. Remember all these things? Everything gets labeled. And that labeling, which causes either attraction to something, which is called
raga.
Raga is either, you know, deep attraction, attachment. Okay, that's called raga. Or the opposite, dislike, hatred, or it's called
dvesha.
Raga, dvesha. So strong likes and strong dislikes, raga and dvesha. And then raga and dvesha result in fear. Fear. Fear of death is the ultimate fear. Okay? So what's the name given here? That last fear of death? Abhinivesha. Abhinivesha. So this is a quick listing of the five types of suffering that we go through. You can call them causes of suffering. Okay? And all this is saying that the avidya, or the lack of proper understanding, is the mother of all the kleshas that are listed below. Okay? It's the mother of all of them. And all the other kleshas could be in the any one of these four states. They could be dormant, feeble, intercepted, or active. Sustained means active at this very moment. So if I'm angry, maybe that's the active state. But then there are certain very subtle, hidden thoughts and emotions which can erupt as anger any time. Those are either in the feeble state or dormant state, etc., etc. So those are the four stages of these kleshas. Okay? So what is avidya? What is lack of understanding? What is lack of knowledge? Okay, this you can read that. It's regarding the impermanent as permanent, impure as pure, and the painful as pleasant. Does everyone get a feel for that? We do that all the time, right? We're always misguided. Alright? Painful as pleasant, impure as pure. Always the same examples. The body is impermanent, but we think it's permanent. Oh, nothing is going to happen, and we only worried about the body. Same thing with the impure. The body is total, full of what? You can call it shit. Right? technically, it's everything that comes out of the body is absolutely. So you can see, but then we call it very pure. We put all kinds of makeup and just. Anyway, so that's the. Okay, so what is ego? What is the cause of ego? The cause of ego is the inability to understand the distinction between the pure self and the ego self. That's way of putting at it. All right, this all comes back to the whole concept of Sankhya philosophy, and I'm not sure I want to spend time on Sankhya philosophy now. We've done that many times. Okay, but just to give you a very quick glimpse, in the Sankhya philosophy there are two entities. One is called the pure self or the Atma, or the technical term is Purusha. Purusha, P-U-R-U-S-H-A. And the rest of it, which is all the material being, this physical body, mind, intellect, that's called Prakriti. So Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha is given the name as the seer or the observer, drashta. And what is seen, which is seen by the Purusha, is the Prakriti. So that's, those are two terms used here, the seer and the seen. It is to not to recognize the distinction between the seer and the seen, which results in ego being the dominant entity in the whole being, causing all kinds of problems for us. So that's the sutra here. The ego is the identification of the power of the seer with that of the body-mind. Okay. Now we come to the concept of raga and dvesha. Raga is, attraction, attachment. So what happens when we have any kind of a pleasant experience? Any experience, whether it's related to food, travel, work, family, coming to this class, okay? Every experience gets listed as an experience in our subconscious mind, and ego puts a label. I like it, I hate it. Okay, so every experience gets a label. If it's a pleasant experience, you develop an attachment to it. That's called raga. If it's an unpleasant experience, you develop aversion to it. Okay, or dislike, hatred, or whatever. Okay, that's called dvesha. Okay. What's abhinivesha? Fear of death. It's actually any kind of fear of change in status quo, so to say. Okay. So, an ultimate fear, like I said, is the fear of death. Fear of death is the ultimate fear. And what this sutra is saying, that ultimate fear of death is something that is inborn in everybody, no matter how wise you are, how enlightened you are. But unless you have reached the highest state of enlightenment, if you are even on the stage, on the path, in that path of yoga, no matter how enlightened, how elevated you are in your level of consciousness, you're going to be afraid of death. So that's a very common characteristics for everybody. Okay. So these are the five kleshas, five kinds of suffering. And how do you eliminate them? They can only be eliminated or resolved when you can resolve them back to the source. Now, this is a lot of Sankhya philosophy, and I don't want to get into that. So I'm going to leave it at that. Okay? This will take another half an hour of diversion to understand what this statement means. Okay? This is all pure Sankhya philosophy. So you have, when they are very, very subtle, when they are deep seated, they can be destroyed by bringing them to their main source. That was the previous one. But when they are active in the mind, when they are still active and you are still bothered by some anger, jealousy, hatred, or some other thought, something bothering you, and these kleshas based on whatever you like, dislike, hatred, etc., etc., they can be slowly diminished by just meditation, dhyana. Dhyana is meditation. So, you know, we have this, the whole karma theory, like I mentioned, is the theory of action, reaction, life, birth, death, and everything. Okay? So, there's this whole term called samskara. Does everyone know what samskaras are? What's samskara?
Impressions in the mind.
Past impressions in the mind. Impressions that we carry in our deep-seated subconscious levels from times immemorial, basically. They have been collecting there. And that whole collection, the bag of these samskaras, is called karmashaya. That's the term they use here, karmashaya. Okay? And these kleshas that we have, these five kleshas, they kind of form the root of this entire karmashaya bag. Okay? And these karmas, this karmashaya, this is what it's saying is that's the cause of your reincarnation, rebirth. Okay? That's what it is saying. So this karmashaya, which is the entire, you can call it the bank balance of your karmas, you know, this whole collection of bag full of karma. I have a bag which is called samskara bag. I should bring that sometime. Okay. So these kleshas, they form the root cause for this bag. Because they bring up, these kleshas are the ones which bring up all kinds of actions. Actions and means experiences. Experiences mean depositing these experiences into our subconscious levels. Okay? And that's what they become, karmashaya. So these kleshas become the root cause, mula. Mula means the root cause of all these samskaras that were represented in our bag. Okay? And then they result in future births. Okay? So depending on what you do now, whatever experiences you have now, pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad, they will bring about results. Karma and karma phala, that's the Sanskrit word for phala, is
fruit.
Phala means fruit. So the fruit of your action will be experienced either in this life, that's what it's saying, either in this life or in a future life. This indicates the whole concept of rebirth after death. Okay? Okay? So, what does this say now? This is what it is saying, that these karmas, when you have a rebirth, they will represent three different attributes of your rebirth. Three attributes. Jati, Ayuhu, and Bhogaha. Those are the three Sanskrit words. What is jati? Species, like, will you be born as a human being or an animal or insect or a bird or whatever? Okay, and within a human being, you know, there are different characteristics, what kind of family you will be born in and all that. That's still as a part of the jati. What is the ayus? Ayuhu?
Lifespan.
Lifespan. How long is your lifespan going to be? Okay. And what's bhogaha?
Experiences.
What kind of experiences you will have? Again, if you had good deeds, you would have pleasant experiences. If you had bad deeds, you have miserable experiences. That's what it is saying. Okay? So, because this is the root cause, so the fruits of all this will be experienced. Okay? And this is again just the statement that I just made. Everything depends on whether you do good deeds now or you do bad deeds. That's all it's saying. Okay? So if you do good deeds, you will have pleasant experiences. If you do bad deeds, you will have unpleasant experiences. That's all this is saying. Punya and apunya, those are the Sanskrit words. Some of you from India might be familiar with this. Punya and apunya. Okay? Okay? Now, this is a long statement here. What it's saying is that even though we are saying pleasant and unpleasant, etc., etc., but he says at the very root of everything, every experience is unpleasant. Everything turns into unpleasantness. What you might consider pleasant now, next moment it might become unpleasant. But at the root of everything, nothing is in its essence, nothing is pleasant. And that is the statement made by Vivekinaha. Vivekinaha means those people who have a very advanced level of awareness, you can say. Viveki. Viveki means they have really become they have become wise because of their discriminatory powers. They can discriminate between good and bad. So they are called Viveki. Okay? So in the experience of these Vivekis, everything becomes unpleasant until you attain full liberation. When you attain full liberation, which is the ultimate state of Kaivalya, or that full freedom, then of course there's nothing unpleasant or unpleasant. Then you're beyond all that pleasant or unpleasant. Until then, everything eventually turns into something unpleasant. Okay? But he says that suffering that has not yet come, that can be avoided. That can be and should be avoided. Okay? Suffering that has not yet come should be avoided. Can be avoided, it's avoidable. What does that mean? You know, I've just given an example here. You know, it's very similar concepts as listed in the Buddhist philosophy. You know, in the Buddhist philosophy, they call them the Four Noble Truths. Anybody heard of that? Four Noble Truths. What are the four truths?
The world is suffering. Existence is suffering.
Suffering. Everything exists as suffering. What else?
The root of suffering is attachment.
I know, but what are the four truths?
It just examines the causes of suffering.
Right.
It's possible to avoid suffering.
It's avoidable, and then what are the means to avoid them? And it's exactly the same thing given in the Yoga Sutras also. In suffering, there's a cause for suffering, and there's a possibility to avoid it, and what are the techniques or means of avoiding suffering eventually in the future. Okay? So the concepts given by Patanjali, very similar to Buddha's in some sense. And that's why most historians believe that they were no more than 200 or 300 years apart. Nobody can tell whether Buddha came first or Patanjali came first. Everyone has their own opinion. because they both seem to be influenced by one another in some ways. Okay, so the prop using the, again, Patanjali says that suffering can be avoided if you follow the guidelines of yoga, basically. Okay. So, like we said in an earlier statement, that this suffering that is avoidable, what's the cause of this suffering?
Separation. Hmm? Thinking you're separate from Purusha.
No, thinking you are the same as Purusha.
Union,
not separation. Separation is the liberation. You're just doing the opposite.
Wait, say that again.
It's the apparent conjunction between the Purusha and Prakriti, apparent union between Purusha and Prakriti. We believe that we are this body, we are this ego. We believe that we are one. We believe that I am nothing but my ego. Okay.
But it's the connection with Purusha.
It's realization that you are Purusha, that's separation. Separation means you are not connected with the ego. You are not joint with the ego. Okay? So the whole reason for this pain and suffering is the apparent union between the Purusha and Prakriti, between the pure self and this material being, which is represented by this body, mind, and the intellect.
Confusing topic sometimes, because yoga, I mean, this is clear, like, that, you know, that we are the Purusha, that we are not the, you know, the physical, and but on the other hand, the word, like, yoga is sometimes interpreted just to mean union, and a lot of people say that it is like the mind body, you know, this is a thought, and so what, why?
No, so the, you know, the most common, if you ask yoga teachers, for example, you know, what's yoga, you know, what their common answer is, what you said, it's the union of mind, body, and spirit, and that's what they commonly say. And if you ask them how to explain that statement, they, well, you know, it's something else. They don't know how to explain that, because they don't understand. Most people, they just say that, but they don't understand it. Okay? What does that mean to be the union of mind, body, and the spirit? If you read this, it's the union of mind, body, and spirit which is the cause of suffering.
Right.
Right? So do not give the meaning of yoga as union between mind, body. That's not true.
Right.
Okay?
What is we covered this in my class, and now I'm struggling to remember the other definition of that there's another way of the discourse.
See, union, the yoga, yoga has multiple meanings. The word yoga in Sanskrit has many, many meanings. If you look at the dictionary, there's the dictionary by Monia Williams, for example, that's the most common. It lists almost like 42 different meanings of yoga. Okay? Union is one of them. In fact, there are certain schools of thought, like Vedanta and, you know, some other schools of thought, where that is exactly the meaning of yoga. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I was trying to say, that you see yourself as separate from the Purusha when really you are connected to
Purusha. You're not connected, you are the Purusha.
Yes, that's what I'm
saying. So you don't say connected. Connection is what we want to separate out. If we are connected, that's problem. If we are it, then that's separation.
It's beyond the good and the bad.
It's beyond connection. So the other meaning, that the meaning that is applicable for us, for yoga, is samadhi. Samadhi is a state of mind where you are fully focused and fully absorbed in your totality. Okay, that's the meaning that is applicable for us. Not the meaning that is normally applied, union of mind, body, and soul, which nobody understands. And they.
That always makes me look at something. Hmm? It's interesting that it's a lot of people.
You say that blindly.
Say that, yeah. But they don't.
It's a lot of misinformation in the popular yoga sphere.
No, that because, you know, the dictionary does give that union as a meaning. And there are other schools of philosophy which actually do apply that meaning. What that means in the Vedanta philosophy, now that we are talking about it, what that means is it's the oneness, not necessarily union. It is oneness between the individual soul, and there is something else called the cosmic soul, which is called Brahman in Vedanta philosophy. So what in that philosophy, what they are saying is that yoga is the union between this individual soul and this cosmic universal soul called Brahman. Okay, they are the same. Or they are part of one another, so to say. So in that sense, that is accurate. But we are not talking of Vedanta philosophy. Our philosophy, the yoga philosophy, our means yoga philosophy, given by Patanjali is different. Okay, so we have to understand it from the context of the yoga philosophy, where it's not union, it is separation. That is important. It's the term they use is V-yoga, not yoga, V-yoga. V-yoga means separation.
Well, also, isn't the seeing going to fall away, right? The seeing, your experiences of this earthly body, that's all going to go away.
That's going to go away eventually.
Whereas the seer
is going to
exist.
No, nothing is going to go away. It's going to go back to its source.
I mean, your physical experience of life is going to just go
it's
away.
Going to go away. The physical experience will go away, but the physical body, you know, I mean, the mind remains, the intellect remains, everything remains. So that's the difference between the yoga philosophy and the Vedanta philosophy. See, in the Vedanta philosophy, this whole being is an illusion. They call it Maya. Have you ever heard the term Maya? Familiar with the term Maya? Maya is illusionary. It is, what's an illusion? Something that is temporary. It's going to disappear eventually, which is true. The physical body is eventually going to disappear. But it's going to, in the yoga philosophy, it says it's not going to disappear permanently. It's going to merge back into its source, which is called Prakriti. So in the yoga philosophy and Sankhya philosophy, Purusha and Prakriti are two entities which are both eternal and both real. Nothing is Maya. Nothing is imaginary. Okay? Nothing is a illusion, as they call it. Okay? Do you get the distinction now? So if somebody asks you what the definition of yoga is, look at this sutra. It's a very important sutra from that point of view. Okay? It's not the union, because union, it says, is the cause of all suffering. Okay? So point out to those people who want to believe that yoga means union. Okay? Union is, it says very clearly, your union is the cause of all that suffering, which can be avoided. Incidentally, you know, you guys are here, but this happens to be the most difficult to understand part of the yoga philosophy in the Yoga Sutras. And you are here in that section now. Okay, this is very esoteric, very deep topic. I don't claim to understand it all at all. You know, we've been struggling with it for a long, long time. And there are many concepts here that are kind of fuzzy in my mind. So I'm trying to do the best I can, okay? Okay, so now it is kind of describing the characteristics of this seen thing, the Prakriti as it's called. What are the characteristics of Prakriti or seer and seen, right? Seen is this whole material being, mind, body, intellect and all that. So what it is saying is that it is a composite of everything in the Prakriti, everything in nature is a composite of three things, you can call them, three gunas, okay? They are called the gunas, and you know, the three, everyone know three gunas? Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. So these are the three gunas that comprise everything in this material universe. Okay? That's what it is saying here. Okay? The words he's using are, for sattva he's using illumination or prakash, activity or rajas, which is kriya, and inertia, which is sthiti, that is tamas. Okay? So those are the three gunas which comprise this entire prakriti or the material being. Everything in us, everything around us is a composite of three gunas. Okay? Sattva means, what does sattva mean?
Calm.
Hmm?
Like the calm.
Calm, purity, everything that is good, clean, clear, pure, okay, no negativity. That's sattva. What is rajas?
High activity,
ambition, gung-ho, that kind of personality or movement. Okay, that's all a part of, your urge to do something, achieve something, that urge to become the CEO of this company, that's all based on rajas. Okay. And what is tamas?
Sloth.
Hmm?
Like a sloth.
Sloth. I like to use the word couch potato. Sit on a couch, watch the football game, have a bag of potatoes with you, and drink a glass of beer and do nothing. That's tamas.
Potato chips.
Hmm?
Potato chips.
Yes.
Bag of potatoes.
Did I say potatoes?
Yeah.
Potato chips, I meant.
We know.
Potatoes. What are you going to do with them? Okay. So that's tamas. But then everything in this material complex is a composite of these three gunas. Okay?
Yes. So the gunas, I think sometimes people give them like moral qualities, but they're more descriptive, right? They're not, Raja's good and Thomas is bad. They're more just...
In some sense, they are good and bad. In some sense, they are desirable. So what they say is tamas is more desirable. Sattva is more desirable. What I want to clarify is all three are necessary ingredients of everything. Necessary. They are all required. It's the proportion or the dominance of one over the other which is what determines what your characteristics are. So when sattva is more dominant, you are able to think more clearly. Your thought becomes very clear, pure, good thoughts. Okay? That's the mental, I'm talking about the mental state of sattva. Okay? So if a person is dominantly rajasic or rajas, he's always going to be on the go. He's never going to sit down peacefully, quietly, and then think about things which are positive. Same thing with tamas. If the mind is dominantly tamasic or full of tamas, you're only going to think of negative things. Either just sleep or plan something negative, killing somebody or hurting somebody, and all those are tamasic stuff. So yes, there is a desirability that you should have a dominance of sattva, because only when sattva is dominant, you can actually go in the direction of spiritual upliftment. Only through sattva, dominance of sattva. You need other things always. So if you have meditated for 10 hours, you still need to sleep. So you need tamas at that time. Okay? And if you've done your morning yoga practice, you still need to go to work. You need rajas for that. But it's the dominance which is what matters. Okay? So the whole idea is to diminish the effects of rajas and tamas in favor of sattva. That will help us go in the higher states of consciousness. Okay? And then again, the next statement is bhuta. What is bhuta? The five elements predominantly. You know, that's the base of the everything that's created as a as prakriti. Five elements are earth,
ether,
earth, water, fire, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. They are called the Mahabhutas, or the five great elements, the basic elements of creation, so to say. So that's what it is, bhuta. And indriya means, what's indriya?
Sense organs.
Sense perception, sense organs. So we have sense perception organs and the senses themselves. Okay? So there are five senses. The sense of smell, touch, taste, etc., everything, you know, five senses. And then five sense organs associated with those. Okay? Five sense organs. What are these?
Nose,
eyes, ears, skin, tongue. Five sense organs. Now, for all these to function, for the sense organs and the sense perceptions to function, there's an 11th organ needed. What is that called?
The mind.
Mind. Without mind, nothing will work, right? So these 11 are called the sense organs. Sense organs, sense perception, and the motor actions, etc., are all engaged with the 11 sense organs. Okay? Now, this one sutra, you know, people have written, you know, 40, 50 pages of commentary on this sutra because it is so pregnant in meaning. So you really have to go through it in very great depth. You can spend an hour talking about the three gunas. You can spend an hour talking about the five elements and the sense perception, sense organs. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's embedded in this one sutra. Okay? And then what is the purpose of this whole drishya, of this whole seeing thing? There are twofold purposes. This is a very important sutra because this will come in many, many future sutras. The reference to this sutra will be made in many sutras in the future. Okay? Because the purpose of this prakriti, of this material being, is twofold. That's the purpose. Twofold. What's the twofold purpose here? Bhoga, that's one word here, bhoga. And the second word is? Apavarga. Bhoga and apavarga, Sanskrit words. What does that mean now? What's bhoga?
Experiences.
Like I said, life is full of experiences. Every moment is an experience. Okay, but that's the purpose of this whole material being, is to present an experience to this purusha. But eventually, the ultimate goal is
happiness, liberation.
Apavarga means final liberation. So that we cleanse, so the whole purpose is to cleanse the mind, cleanse all the impurities in the mind, so that eventually the purusha begins to realize, I'm in the wrong place. I should not be attached to my ego. I should be free of this. That attachment comes because of all the impurities in the mind. Because everything, it's all the garbage that's filled up in the mind. All the dirt, all the impurities. Okay? So that's bhoga is applied through the five senses, through our motor action. That's all the experiences, how we perceive things, how we experience things. And then eventually, continue to work toward this purification, cleansing of the mind so that eventually the ego loses its power, and then Purusha, or the pure soul, realizes its true identity. Okay? I should not have been here. That's what it says eventually. So do you get this? This is a very, very deep, like I said, very pregnant sutra, a lot of meaning and information in this one sutra. Okay. This again needs this sutra needs a lot of introduction to the Prakriti and Sankhya philosophy. I'm going to skip on this because it's a long discussion. But basically, it's talking about at a very high level. There are 23 elements in the body, 23 elements. And very, very quickly, I'm not going to spend time on that. So there are 23 elements are the intellect, ego, mind, 5 sense perceptions, 5 sense organs, 5 organs of action, and 5 Mahabhutas. So 5, that's 20, plus 3, mind, ego, and the intellect, they form the 23 elements. And they have a succession. One is the cause, the other is the effect. One is the effect, the other is the... One is the cause, effect. That effect becomes the cause and have other effects, etc., etc. That's what this sutra is all about, cause and effect. Okay. A lot of stuff that we went through last time on these sutras. Okay. So, again, this one is another same statement that we have kind of understood, that this Purusha, even though it's very pure, even though it is unconnected with anything, but it can only see or experience life through the power of the mind. Okay, so it does have a just to be able to experience life, it has to go through the mind. Mind means the intellect and everything is involved there. Intellect, mind, and all that stuff. Okay? So this Purusha is pure power of seeing itself. But to experience life, it has to go through the mind. That's what it is saying. Okay? And this is just a restatement of what we had seen earlier. That the drishya is the seen or the prakriti or the material being. The whole purpose of material being is to fulfill the ultimate goal of liberation for the purusha. That's the whole purpose, that why we are here. Our purpose in our life is to attain liberation. That's what it is saying.
The purpose of our life is to what?
Attain liberation. Basically, that's what the sutra is saying, that purpose of life is ultimately to attain liberation.
Not happiness.
It will give you pure joy, ananda. But, it depends on how you define happiness, you know. Normal happiness, that's not what we want. So that's always tainted with unhappiness. So that's not what we are looking for. Okay. So what happens when you attain liberation? That's the statement now. So what happens is when you attain liberation, the 3 gunas, they go back to their source, they are merged back into their state of balance and liberation. And there is no more need for the intellect. Intellect loses its value because it's done its job. Okay, so Purusha or the pure soul has become free, liberated. Okay. Now, there's no function of the ego left. So the mind is going to function without the ego based on purely the intellect now. So it is, you know, exactly a very pure mind that's going to be left over. Very pure. No involvement through the ego. That's the state that we're going to be. Okay. So, in a sense, this prakriti, this particular material being which was attached to this Purusha, that has finished its job, it doesn't exist anymore in a sense, like you were saying. It doesn't exist in that sense. I mean, it has a function to do. If you're still alive, you will still have to do your job and all that. But that job is being done from a very pure state of being, not from the ego part. Okay? But then Prakriti is still engaged and involved with other Purushas. If I, you know, if I attain liberation, you are still going to be, working on that. So Prakriti exists for everyone else except for that Purusha which has been liberated. Like I said, these are very deep concepts, and it's unfortunate that you are here for this part, which is very deep. And it takes a lot of time. I'm just going through it in a fast train, express train speed, just to bring you, I hope I can bring you up to speed a little bit.
Doesn't that mean you just don't get rid of your habits or your wants? Those things just still continue, even though you've been liberated.
What will continue?
Your habits.
No.
No.
Your samskaras are gone.
You're liberated.
You're liberated. There is no binding to the habits. There's no binding to the past impressions. There's no binding to anything that you knew in the past. There's no binding.
There's no binding, but you're still going to act like you did probably before.
Yeah, you just keep acting. Yeah. But you act from a very pure state of being, not from the ego. Ego is not going to look at the past impression, oh, guys, I liked it. Or I disliked it. Let's not do it. That's not going to happen. It's going to be evaluated very purely from the pure, clean mind. Now, everything. Okay? It's clean slate.
Hard to imagine that.
It's very tough to, because we have never been there, so it's hard to imagine a state where we've never been there.
Yeah, because it is hard for your experiences not to disturb your liberated self, I guess. It's just hard to imagine that anybody would be in that state and
yes.
still exist to go through
right.
life.
And you can't always stay there, can you? I mean, you can come to liberation and then you can lose it, and then you can come to liberation again.
That happens too, yeah. That happens too.
Yeah, that is more relatable. Like you think, okay,
or maybe that's a different level.
It's a different level. I mean,
there's different levels of enlightenment.
Samadhi, there are samprajnata samadhi, there's asamprajnata samadhi, we'll go into that later. But again, samadhi has different levels. There are six stages of samadhi that it talks about. Okay? Yes, and you can, until you reach the very ultimate state, you can always fall back.
This is it. I'm peaceful. Everything, nothing matters, And then you're driving your car home and you're like, you just cut me off. Like, oh, no, it's gone. I lost it. I had this wonderful liberation and it's all gone. But you remember it. You remember how nice it was.
You at least have a taste of it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. All right, so, I see. So this is what we did last time. But again, what it's saying is, even to attain liberation, you first have to be united. You have to go through this whole sequence of bhoga and apavarga of experiences and then attain liberation. But that sanyoga, that union, is required for the liberation. That's what it is saying. Even though that's the cause of suffering, and it's still a required thing. Without that, no liberation can happen.
So it makes more sense. That's just part of the process.
It's a part of the process.
Yeah.
This is a very difficult sutra to understand. I do not claim to understand it 100% even now. We had a lot of discussion on this one. And, Like we always like to say, I've gone through this sutra many, many times, but that sutra still hasn't gone through me. I like to say that because that's how it is.
It doesn't make sense, the union of owner.
The union of Purusha and Prakriti, which is the cause of suffering that we have seen earlier, but it still is a requirement for that liberation to happen. It's only through this union that we can be liberated. That's what it is saying. So it's only through this union that you understand the svarupa. Svarupa means the true nature of both the seen and the seer, Purusha and Prakriti. It's only through this union you will see that. Otherwise you have no way of knowing exactly what every element in the material world is. You know, there is this, like I said, there are stages of samadhi. In the deepest state of samadhi, you become one with the object of meditation. That's when you become one with the object of meditation, you know that ultimately, that element that is known to you completely then. So to know that, and then once you go jump from there, you know the Ishvara or the Purusha also. That's liberation. But you have to have that union first before you get to the liberation part. Okay, so this is how far we went last time. All right. Okay. If you don't mind, I'll take a 2-minute break. I'll need to fill out my bottle. I need, and it's in the other room, so I need to go there. Just take a break if you need. Now, what it's saying is, this is where we actually now do the sutra, one word at a time, okay? So we'll repeat after me, one word at a time. Tasya hetuhu avidya. So I'm breaking these words into different components. Tasya hetuhu avidya. Tasya means it's the cause of that union which was mentioned in the previous sutra. That's its. Its means the union that we talked about in the previous sutra. That cause of that union, hetuhu means cause. Hetuhu means cause. And avidya is the lack of proper knowledge or ignorance. That's what is. So remember when we said in the very beginning that 5 kleshas are there. The top klesha was avidya or not knowing the reality. That's the cause of this union. That's what causes this Purusha and Prakriti to seem as if they are one. Okay? You get that? So that's the union that we're talking about. And so these are some of the notes that I have. It's the avidya which is the cause of this union between Purusha and Prakriti, or the apparent union, because in reality they are liberated. In reality, in the essence, there is no union, but it's apparent that they are united, because the ego gets dominant and Purusha seems to be acting through the ego then. Okay, and that's the union that we are talking about. But avidya, where does it come from? That's what they always ask. There's no answer to that question, because they say, very simply, it's beginningless. We are born with it, you know, that it's beginningless. There's no beginning to it. But it's not endless. It can eventually be ended. That's the whole purpose of yoga, is to eventually eliminate this avidya or ignorance or this lack of understanding. So then we are full of understanding. We have realized ourselves in state self-realization. That's all possible. But avidya is ignorance which is beginningless. And, you know, what they say is that it's, you know, there's the whole concept of, in Sanskrit they call it pralaya. Does everyone know what pralaya is? So there's a cosmic cycle that we go through. Okay, this whole universe came to existence at some point in time, and it will dissolve back into its own source at some point in time. And that point in time may be millions of years apart. Okay, maybe billion years apart. But that's how the whole cycle keeps going. And they claim in our yoga philosophy or Indian philosophy, this cycle keeps going and coming back again. It's called pralaya. Okay? Now, this avidya is a part of that whole cycle because it's part of the subtle body which goes into reincarnation. So the whole concept of rebirth, the way it is described in our texts, in our scriptures, that we have a physical body called the gross body, we have the subtle body, and then we have the causal body. It's called the karana sharira. So the subtle, sthula, it's called Sanskrit, and called it sthula sharira. Now, sthula is gross, sukshma sharira is subtle. And this whole ignorance, or which is the avidya, or the lack of understanding, it's all a part of the subtle body. Okay, and the subtle body is the one which is entangled with the purusha, or the soul. So this whole conglomerate of the soul and this whole karmashaya, the samskaras, and they are all a part of the subtle body. Okay? This whole conglomerate, except just the physical five elements, they don't go anywhere. They get dissolved back to the five elements at the time of physical death. Okay? But this is the subtle body, eventually that will reincarnate into a new purusha when the new baby is born. That's how the whole concept goes. And this cycle keeps going. And at the time of pralaya, when the whole universe dissolves back into its source, it dissolves back into the source, everything. But their identity remains, they say. Everyone will come back with their own subtle bodies when the whole universe gets recreated. How that happens, nobody knows. I certainly don't. Okay? But this is the kind of the understanding they gave us. So this whole...
It's a little confusing because if we're going to be reincarnated, or you're going to come back as your subtle body, if we were reborn many times, which subtle body are we coming back as?
Every time there's a new subtle body, because the karmashaya, the bag of karma, samskaras, it keeps changing its content. It keeps changing its content because we are earning some karmas here, we are dissolving some karmas in this life, and then subtle body, that structure of subtle body changes. What goes in the bag will eventually come back in the next life.
So you say we have a new purusha when we're reborn?
Yes. That we are going to get merged with the new purusha.
I thought the purusha was...
Not new purusha. New physical body.
Yeah, yeah.
Not new purusha. I misstated that.
Yeah.
Purusha is entangled with the subtle body, but it's going to get a physical body. The five elements will be new. Okay, all that part will be new.
So, if you attain the highest level of samadhi, would it exist all the way through this dissolution of the cosmic cycle?
If you attain the highest, then you're gone. Then your karmasha is dissolved.
Even through all this.
Then you don't go through the cycle anymore.
Even though the whole universe may get destroyed.
Yes, you're
good.
Gone.
You're good.
Wherever you are, you're good.
That's good. It's nice to know.
Is that
your pure light?
Part of a belief of yoga?
Yes.
Or of that's not
Indian
Hinduism?
Both.
Both, okay. It just overlaps.
It overlaps, yes. It's one of the basic tenets of Hinduism, and it's all to Patanjali. We just went through this sutras. Patanjali also talks about that, yes. So it's part of yoga, and it's a part of Hinduism. So rebirth is a very strong component of Hindu philosophy. Okay, so it is because of this ignorance that this purusha or the soul or the atma is kind of identified with the physical body, with the ego predominantly, ego and the intellect. So they all merge back into one. And that's how they operate. So ego is dominant and we doesn't see the clarity of thinking through the clear passage that we're talking about. And we all messed up. Okay? And that's what we're coming to next. It's through the discriminatory wisdom only that then this avidya or this ignorance or the lack of knowledge can be dispelled and taken and gotten rid of. Okay? This is just a statement, again, kind of a repetition of what we have been saying, that once this union that was the cause of all the suffering, once that union is not there, abhava means absence of this union. Sanyoga abhava. Okay? Abhava means absence. So when there is no union or when there is absence of samyoga, okay, then you attain the final state of liberation. Kaivalyam is the final state of freedom from this bondage. Kaivalyam. That's the title of the fourth chapter also. Kaivalyam. And that's the state which is final state of liberation. It's called Kaivalyam in Sanskrit. Okay? So again, no union, please. Yoga is not the union of mind, body and spirit. Okay? This is from our perspective. This comes again and again. You see that? No such union occurs. To attain that final liberation, you want to disunite the two. Okay? And again, this is just a repetition of the same statements that we have seen before. Union of Purusha and Buddhi or the Prakriti is the cause of bondage and suffering. And this union is called by avidya or lack of knowledge. And ignorance must be removed to separate the two. Okay? It's very hanam. Hanam is the word used here. It's the word used in Sanskrit for removal of suffering or attaining the final goal of yoga. Okay, that's the removal of suffering. That's hanam. That's the same word used by Buddha in the Four Noble Truths. Same word, Sanskrit word, hanam. Okay. And then Purusha can realize its true identity, leading to final liberation. Okay? So let's read this sutra. Vivek khyati hi aviplava hanopaya. One more time. Vivek khyati hi aviplava hanopaya. Okay, Viveka. Viveka means intellect which has attained the discriminatory wisdom. Viveka means you'll be able to discriminate between good and bad, real and unreal. That's Viveka. Viveka khyati. Khyati is knowledge. Or Viveka khyati here is pure discriminatory discernment, as they call it in English. Discriminatory discernment. Viveka khyati. Aviplava means what? Viplava means interruption, which is not steady, something that is steady. Viplava means something that is steady, which is not disturbed, not distracted. Aviplava is, I'm saying it opposite way. Okay, I'm not saying it right. Aviplava is the negative of viplava. Okay, viplava is something which is changeable, which is not stationary, which is not steady. Aviplava is uninterrupted, undistracted, undisturbed. Okay, what it's saying is that you have to reach that state of discriminatory discernment, which is stable, constant. Okay, not fluctuating, not flickering. You might attain, like you said, you might attain that state for a moment, and then you're driving home, you cut across, and then you so-and-so, right? So that's the temporary state. So that's why it is saying that state of Viveka Khyati, which is totally uninterrupted. Nobody can disturb that state. That's the state you need eventually to remove this final obstacle to our attainment or liberation. Okay? So the final attainment of the goals of yoga, for that you have to attain this viveka khyatihi, which is aviplava. Totally steady, undisturbed, undistracted, unmoving, okay? That kind of viveka khyati. This term has been used many times by Patanjali, viveka khyati, okay? So you have to get familiar with this term in Sanskrit. Viveka khyati, which means pure discriminatory wisdom or discernment. That's the English translation of this. Okay? Again, these are the same statements repeated, but just to give a clear understanding. Suffering is eliminated by removing the cause, which is avidya. Purusha then attains the state of kaivalya. But avidya is removed by awakening viveka khyati. That's the discriminatory wisdom. With this wisdom, the samskaras become like burnt seed. That's the whole objective. You know, you said that, like Gail was saying, you know, we have still the habits or the samskaras in the body. No, they may be there, but they are like burnt seeds, ineffective. They will not bear any fruit anymore. They cannot disturb your mind. So if something happened 20 years ago, it's not going to come up and disturb your mind. You are free of that now. That's the whole purpose of this whole discriminatory wisdom, viveka khyati. Nothing that is embedded in your mind is going to come up and disturb you. See, normally that's what happens, right? Something happened 15 years ago and you think of it, oh my God, I should have done this and that, or maybe, you know, I wish I could live my life one more time over and things like that. You know, we keep doing that.
Don't wish that you're going to have that's going to happen. Many times over.
Okay, so that... When these seeds are like burnt seeds, none of that is going to bother you then. None of that is ever going to cause any disruption in your mind.
How many lifetimes does that take? Many.
Who knows? Millions. Who knows? I don't know. Patanjali says it's going to take a long time, many lifetimes. But you're not born with a clean slate every time. That's the whole point here. Because you are clear, you are cleansing your karmashaya by doing these sadhana practices, your karmashaya has becoming clearer and clearer now. That bag of karma, bag of samskara, then eventually it is going to be cleared out. So you made a good start. That's all we can say. You made a good start. Okay. So that's the important information here. The samskaras, which are still there, they cannot go anywhere, but they become ineffective. They cannot bear any more fruit. They cannot bring up any more emotions in the mind. That's the main purpose of this. Okay. So, when we attain that viveka khyatihi, then it says this word prajna will come again and again in this. Prajna is that wisdom. Now we are talking of that pure discriminatory wisdom. That's prajna. Okay? And what it's saying is that is attained through these seven stages of evolution. Patanjali doesn't give you any definition of these seven stages. It's all the commentators who are struggling to find out what these seven stages are. Okay? So, Swami Satchidananda, whose translation I have, it's very different, and nobody believes that what he's saying is right. So these seven stages, and then finally, I copied this from another text, which is based on Vyasa's commentary, which is the most authoritative commentary on yoga. Most ancient and most authoritative, Vyasa. Everyone knows that. Okay. So this is an explanation of what Vyasa has said. Okay? So what it is saying is, there are the seven stages of prajna. The inner sources of future suffering, which is avoidable, have been identified, and there is nothing further to be known in this regard. Okay? So we have understood what the kleshas are, we have understood the sources of suffering, which is union and all that we talked about. It's basically, you know, these seven stages are nothing but a summary of what we have discussed so far. Exactly what that word is. Okay? The summary of what we have discussed so far. Whose book is that? It doesn't say who the author is.
Interesting. Charles Johnston.
Okay.
Same things, very different words. So I'm writing down your definitions.
Well, my definition, again, they may not be accurate because these are from the book. Patanjali's... I just copied those.
Yeah, some, you know, they're similar meanings.
Yeah.
But I find the words you're giving clearer than the descriptions here.
Okay. But, you know, like when we go through these, I disagree with many of the translations that Patanjali, that Sachidananda has given. So...
Have you read the Gregor Mall? Gregor Mall, he has an Ashtanga book, but then at the end...
What's the name?
Gregor Mall, M-A-E-H-L-E, I think. He's got, it's an Ashtanga book, but then there's a translation of the sutras at the end. That's,
no, I
that's
haven't
fairly
seen.
Simple. It's pretty...
I haven't seen that book.
No. Too much detail.
I have almost like 20 different versions of Yoga Sutras, but that's not one of them. Okay.
This will be like on your Dropbox. Like
these slides?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they are all on my podcast page.
Yeah.
Every time I give the link to these. Every time. So those links are available. If you go to my blog, the links are there. All they are on my Dropbox.
Okay. Yes.
But the links are there.
Just confirm me.
No, these PowerPoint slides are available to everybody. Okay. Let's read through these because this will make us, you kind of give us a summary of what we have done so far. Okay. So what says the inner sources of future suffering, which is avoidable? We said that tasya, you know, that the pain that has not come yet is avoidable. So we have understood the root cause of that suffering, which is the union, we said. The root cause of suffering, union of seer and seen, have been removed with nothing more left to be done with them. The through total restraint or nirodha attained in deep absorption in samadhi, the removal of misidentification between Purusha and Buddhi has been attained, and the true nature of self has been realized. This is exactly what we've been saying so far. Okay? So through that identification, or the identification has been removed, the means of liberation have been mastered. Nothing further remains to be done in the mind to inquire. Okay? The Buddhi, or the intellect, the higher discriminative aspect, has fulfilled its purpose of bhoga and apavarga, which is the life experience and liberation. Remember that 2.18 sutra, which I said is very important, that says what the purpose of this whole life is to provide experience in bhoga, and apavarga is liberation. That has been understood, and then we have nothing more to do. The activities of buddhi are no longer needed as gunas have attained their balance. The three gunas have now become fully balanced in their ultimate, in their most balanced state, and they have merged back with the source, with the prakriti, as it's called. Okay. Pure consciousness of Purusha is now standing alone in its true eternal self, beyond any relationship with the three gunas, the sattva, rajas, and tamas. So there's no relationship, there's no union. So we have gone past that union. Okay? So these are, like I said, the commentators who gave us these seven stages. Patanjali doesn't say anything. All it says is Saptadha. Saptadha means seven stages. That's it. These are talks given by Patanjali. I'm assuming they were given to his students, and he must have talked about all these before. And then they summarized into these sutras. Okay. So this is the introduction to the eight limbs of yoga now. Okay. So let's go through this sutra. It's a very important and very beautiful sutra. It introduces what the purpose of the eight limbs of yoga are. Okay, so repeat after me. Yogang,
Yoganga.
Anushthanat,
Anushthanat.
Ashuddhi,
Kshaye,
Jnanadeeptihi,
Jnanadeeptihi.
Vivek Khyatehe.
Okay,
so one more time. Yogang Anushthanat,
Yogang
Ashuddhi Kshaye,
Jnanadeeptihi,
Vivek Khyatehe. All right, let's try to understand the meaning of these words now. Anga means the limbs, and Yoganga means the limbs of yoga. Okay, so Patanjali now is introducing these eight limbs of yoga. So what he's saying is Yogang Anushthanat. Anushthan means practice. Okay. So through the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, that's so far, Yogang Anushthanat. Anushthanat means through the practice, through the experience of these limbs of yoga. What happens? Ashuddhi Kshaye. Ashuddhi means impurities, and Kshaye means destruction, diminishing of the impurities. So that happens. Okay, so through the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, all the impurities of the mind, they are wiped out, basically. What are the impurities of the mind?
Anger.
What else?
Jealousy.
Everything is included. But in general, we talk about these, when we talk about the impurity, they call them Shatripu, six enemies of the mind. What are these six? Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. So, your name in Sanskrit, Matsara, means jealousy.
In Italian, Matsa is a club. It means to hit
somebody.
Not good.
Yeah, but in Sanskrit, Sanskrit matsara means jealousy.
Not good either.
You're hitting someone because
you're so it's kama. Kama is lust or craving. Krodha is anger. Lobha is greed. Moha is delusion or strong attachments. Mada is arrogance. And matsarya is
jealousy.
Okay, so that's they call them the six enemies of the mind, Shatripu as they call them. Okay, and then everything is an impurity of the mind. Ego is an impurity of the mind. All the thought patterns, the negative thoughts that come up in the mind, and anxiety, depression, all these things, stress. Everything is something negative in the mind. These are all impurities.
It says that the way to wash out these impurities is Swadhyaya, self-study.
Yeah. Who says that?
I looked this up when you talked about it the other day. It's, I don't know who this is.
That's okay. Swadhyaya is a very important part of the whole process. That's what it says. Tapas, Swadhyaya, and Ishvara Pranidhana. Those are the three activity or actions which are called Kriya Yoga. Okay? And those are the three which are used for diminishing the klesha. And kleshas are the cause for all these impurities of the mind, basically. Okay? So everything is connected. Yes, Swadhyaya is a big part of that then. Okay? So ashuddhi kshaye. Kshaye means diminishing or destruction or removal of these ashuddhis. Ashuddhi is all the impurities. Jnana deeptihi. What is jnana? True knowledge. True. Again, we are talking of not the bookish knowledge. This is pure jnana. Pure jnana means lack of vidya. That means you have understood the discriminate. This is the prajna kind of jnana. Pure discriminatory wisdom. Jnana deepti means
light.
So the light of pure wisdom will shine through. Okay, through the practice of these eight limbs of yoga, first all the impurities are removed. Because the impurities are removed, you can now see the light of true wisdom. Otherwise that light was cluttered, that was covered by these impurities of the mind. You couldn't see through it. But now, having cleansed the mind of all the impurities, now you can see the light of true wisdom. There's no ego now. Ego has been separated out. And therefore, you can see the true light of wisdom, and you see that until, ah means until, you attain the state of viveka khyati. That's the same state we talked about, pure, unalloyed, pure wisdom, which is ultimate understanding of who you truly are, which simply means that this will lead you to self-realization. Okay? So that's the promise that Patanjali makes. Practice these eight limbs of yoga and you will attain self-realization. Okay. So that's the final sutra before it introduces the then this is just the introduction to this is just the listing of the eight limbs of yoga. Everyone knows that now. Alright. So let's just repeat these words and then we'll close today. Okay. Yama. Niyama.
Niyama.
Asana.
Asana.
Pranayama.
Pratyahara.
Pratyahara.
Dharana.
Dhyana.
Samadhi.
Ashtau.
Angani.
Ashtau means eight, Angani means limbs. So he has listed these eight limbs of yoga. He says these are the eight limbs of yoga. Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. These, he says, are the eight limbs of yoga. Okay? Alright. So that's all I have to say for today. Because we have done all the eight limbs of yoga in the past. This is the introduction to the eight limbs of yoga. But this is a very beautiful and a very important sutra which introduces the eight limbs of yoga. Okay? Any more thoughts or questions? Anything that comes to mind? So how do we want to proceed from next time on? Recycle or any other topic that comes to mind that you want to discuss? How many are interested in recycle and then continue?
Just started.
I know, but are you interested in continuing? Okay. So we can recycle from. But this time what I think I'll do is, in the past I have kind of clubbed them into topics and then I went topic wise. Maybe this time I'll go sutra by sutra, right? Go from one sutra to 53 and then take the second chapter and just go through that whole sequence. Yes. And so start from there and then go one by one, rather than, you know, I picked eight limbs of yoga first and then we did something else, Ishvara first, second, and all those things. So we can do that. Okay? That all right? Okay.